The time is 1:35, and the date is 1 February 1983. The place is the House Judiciary Room 124 in the Capitol Building in Juneau. At this time, I'd like to inform everybody there's a sign-up slip at the door. Those that wish to testify today or even to observe, I'd call your attention to it at this time and hope you sign up, because we're going to get right into the hearing on the bill. And the bill for discussion today is House Bill Number 10. It's an act relating to an imitation controlled substances. The bill essentially names seven substances that can be used to manufacture imitation controlled substances. We had set up today to have a teleconference and some people to, namely Rhonda Butterfield amongst one, to testify in Anchorage, and she's not there. We're unable to locate her. So I'd like at this time to let the record show that the committee is all present, with the exception of Representative Malone. And we have the bill sponsor, Representative Abood, present, and we'd like him at this time to take the seat at the end of the table and make a statement. Representative Boone, if you want that to go out over the teleconference, you know how to make everything record. When you're ready, state your name for the record and proceed in a manner such as you will.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Representative Mitch Abood, and I'm the sponsor of this particular bill, House Bill 10. Excuse my voice, I think I'm losing it. I would like to make a short statement in the beginning. Imitation controlled substances, or look-alike drugs, are drugs that resemble amphetamines, barbiturates, and other dangerous illegal drugs. The look-alike drugs contain legal stimulants such as caffeine and I think you'd have a problem with this too. ephedrine, common ingredients in diet, wake-up, and cold tablets. The multicolored pills are made to look like popular illegal drugs or stimulants. Many shops and mail-order houses have advertised the PET pills as the source of a fine, light feeling, attracting many young people to what is perceived as a cheap high. The danger is that look-alikes must be taken in large quantities to simulate the effect of controlled substances. If a drug abuser familiar with the look-alike gets the real thing or takes it at the familiar dosage, death, hemorrhage, or psychosis may result. The social effects of overt advertisements and dealing with pushers encourage drug abuse as well. There are currently no existing statutes banning the manufacture, distribution, or advertisement to promote distribution of imitation controlled substances in Alaska. The federal government is, however, aiding and encouraging states to enact laws governing look-alike drugs. Currently, 36 states have enacted similar legislation. It is important to consider that when manufacturers and distributors are forced to leave one state, they will simply begin operations in a state having no legislation governing these drugs. This is the main thrust behind the reason for this bill, and I would highly recommend the passage of it. Now, there's a bill analysis I believe the committee has. I also have, there are also some other people here at the moment. I would like to defer any questions at the moment, right at this point in time, to allow two other in particular witnesses to give you some further testimony regarding this particular bill. And if I may ask the chairman to approve of that deferment of questions to me at this particular time, or would you prefer to have me answer them?
Well, if you'd, I presume you want to put Trooper McCoy on to expand on your remarks, is that what you had in mind?
Yes, the reason I'd like to do that is because Lieutenant McCoy, with the state troopers, has been working with this particular problem for the past 8 years, and I'd like to have the committee get the real McCoy out of it, if you give the pun.
That's okay. You're not going to leave, are you?
No, sir. I'll be here for the balance of the meeting.
Okay. Is Trooper McCoy...
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Why don't we just get another chair and we can sit right handy here. Trooper McCoy, are you familiar with the way this apparatus operates in front of you? We're on a teleconference network, and while you're speaking, if you'll just reach out and touch the bar or have representative group with. And if you're ready, if you'll state your name for the record and proceed in such a manner as you wish.
My name is Roger McCoy. I'm a lieutenant with the Alaska State Troopers, and I've been a state trooper for the last 15 years. My present assignment is the acting detachment commander here in southeastern Alaska. Of the last 15 years, 8 of those years have been spent primarily in drug investigation. 2 of those 8 years have been in an undercover capacity. House Bill 10 has researched some statistics here that may help. In 1981, the calendar year of 1981, the statewide drug unit in Alaska made 95 cases. In 1982, it made 214 cases. This shows a drastic increase of look-alike drugs. The most common imitation substance or look-alike drug is caffeine and ephedrine. Another common drug, or excuse me, common substance that is drastically increasing in the past year, and I could not pronounce it, but it's on line 24 of the first page, item number 5. We've made several cases just in the past year of that particular substance. In fact, one recent case here that brings me to mind in Anchorage that occurred, a man sold caffeine as amphetamine, the street name is Speed. And after the buyer found out that he was, I'll use the terminology, cheated, he then went to the buyer, or excuse me, to the seller, and took a handgun and shot it in the face. We have several homicides that have occurred in the Palmer Anchorage area in the last 2 years that are drug related. They are still under investigation, and I cannot go into the details of the cases. To give you an idea of why somebody would want to sell imitation substances such as caffeine and ephedrine. But to give you an idea, a bag, I'm using the street terminology here, a bag is 100 tablets. 100 tablets of the real thing, amphetamine, cost $200 to $300. A bag or 100 tablets of caffeine, its appearance is exactly the same as amphetamine, sells for $200 to $300. A 1,000 tablets, which is referred to as a jar, sell for $1,500. One single tablet will sell between $3 and $5. It doesn't matter if it's an imitation substance or if it's the real thing. It still sells for $3 to $5. The difference is the cost to the buyer, or to the seller. The seller will pay 3 to 5 cents for one tablet, and they'll sell it for $3 to $5. So I'm showing you the margin of profit in imitation drugs as compared to the real drugs. I like to refer to a particular imitation substance that is not a controlled substance. It's called lidocaine. Now, it is not on the House Bill 10. However, I refer to it because of a recent case that occurred in Fairbanks, Alaska. Lidocaine is an imitation controlled substance that its appearance is the same as cocaine. It's referred to as toot. Now, I'll go back to this toot in a second on some handout that I'm going to give you. But lidocaine, or I should say cocaine, sells for approximately $2,400 per ounce, or $125 to $150 per gram. This case in Fairbanks, the man sold an ounce of lidocaine, sold it as cocaine, to an undercover officer. He was charged with sales of cocaine. He sent the substance to our laboratory and came back as lidocaine. Result, case dismissed. We then charged him with theft by deception. But he didn't concede the undercover officer. However, the district attorney refused to prosecute because there was a lack of intent. The man or the defendant that was selling the substance, lidocaine, as cocaine, did not know it was not cocaine. Therefore, lacked the intent. Common street knowledge of amphetamine, maybe some of you have heard of Black Beauty, Soft Pop, and the use actually as a help proxy so you understand what I'm talking about. I brought some samples. Now these, I'll pass these around if you don't mind. Mm-hmm. These are referred to as soft pop amphetamines. The imitation controlled substance appearance is exactly the same as the real thing. They'll sell for $300 per hundred, $200 to $300 per hundred. Here's a case that happened in our junior high school here in Juneau. This is 100% pure caffeine. Harmless, taken in small doses. This is ephedrine. These are tablets that the substance is ephedrine. They sell for $3 to $5 a piece. By the way, these are not cases any longer today. I would like to pass out publications that anyone can get on any newsstand. You can buy them in the supermarkets, you can buy them in the drugstores.
You would notice on the one page right here, the first one I gave you. On the second page, you'll see the word toot. Or you can buy a half an ounce for $75. This is the case that we had in Fairbanks. We sold it for $1,000 per half ounce, or $2,000 per ounce. So that shows you the example of the profit margin. On the back page, you can buy your capsule for $80 per thousand, and then fill them with any substance that you care to use. On the other publications that are their copies that I handed you, you notice one of them that says, clearance prices,
I think it's on the last page, or it may be the first page. Clearance crisis. Orange aid, fatigue fighter. It's caffeine. $65 per thousand. Now only $12. And another one there. Midwest Pharmaceutical. You've seen them, you've bought them, you've paid too much. The highest quality available, let's make a deal. What you do is you call them or write them and they'll send you a complete catalog of their sales. Now these people that are manufacturing these are in the States. We do not know of any manufacturer in the state of Alaska at this time. But these are not clandestine labs. These are upfront pharmaceutical companies. Where the money is made is the seller, the man in between. There's three reasons that I can readily come up with for House Bill 10, and that is this. After a buyer finds out, after he's purchased imitation drugs, and he finds out that he's been cheated or duped, often results in violence. And this is one of the cases that I, in Anchorage, that occurred that I referred to. Secondly, juveniles. Juveniles that can take, and they do take, 4 to 5 of these tablets to get any kind of a buzz, and they will. Caffeine is a stimulant. In fact, nicotine and cigarettes and caffeine are the most common stimulants. If you take 4 or 5 adult ones, they'd have to take more, but a juvenile, because of his body size, if he takes 4 or 5 tablets, he'll get somewhat of a little buzz or a mood-altering feeling. But if he does this several times, and he runs out and goes buy some more, he may get the real thing next time. And if he takes 4 or 5, then he overdoses with the possibility of death. So this is the danger part of it. We have no control of what is sold on the street. Neither does the buyer. He has no control, he doesn't know what he's getting. He's only getting what he's told he's getting. And it's normally a lie when it comes to imitation drugs or imitation substances. A third is, when juveniles can purchase a bag of these imitation pills or tablets, this is influencing their minds into the drug culture because it is a quick, easy way to make money. He buys it from his friend, he sells it to his friend, and the person that ends up with the tablet and takes the tablet is one that loses the money. I'm talking about money, but the effects of the tablets, the effects of just being involved in the drug culture is what is harmful to juveniles. Are there any questions I could ask or answer of anybody?
Thank you very much, Trooper McCoy. Are there questions of the committee for either Representative Boone or Trooper McCoy? I have Representative Coxon and then Representative Woodby next.
Let me ask first, is there actually anybody on the teleconference network that we need to go through that exercise?
Barbara Nankers, this is from the U.S.
I'm assuming.
Yes, sir.
Do you have Rhonda Butterfield there?
Yes, we do.
Okay.
And we have another participant, John R. Meehan.
Representative Clarkson, we have 2 people to testify out there. I ask you to just keep the questions as short as possible so that we can get the teleconference people on as soon as possible.
Well, maybe we ought to if I could hold my questions, I'd be perfectly happy to do that to hear the testimony as long as we're going to stick around. So that's fine.
I have general concurrence from the committee, so if you two gentlemen will stick around, we'll go ahead and bring the teleconference to Anchor John and ask Rhonda Butterfield to testify, please, if you will. Mm-hmm.
This is Rhonda Butterfield. I'm an assistant attorney general with the Office of Special Prosecutions and Appeals in Anchorage. We are part of the Department of Law. Mr. Chairman and honorable members of the committee, I have a few remarks on behalf of the Department of Law on House Bill 10, the Imitation Controlled Substances Bill. There is a need for this type of legislation, as both Lieutenant McCoy and Representative Abood have pointed out. There seems to be a growing abuse of phony or fake drugs over the last few years, which may lead to further problems if people continue to use drugs. And this is a particular problem among school-age children. Right now, under the new Controlled Substances Act, which went into effect about a month ago, there are only two ways to deal with people under the criminal statute who deal in phony drugs. One is to charge them with an attempted crime, whether it's an attempted delivery, attempted possession, or attempted delivery to a minor, and only if we can prove that the person believed that the substance that he had, that he was delivering, was the real controlled substance. And we need evidence to do that. It's frequently difficult to obtain evidence as to what the person believes when he is simply delivering the drug. The penalty for an attempted crime is one class of crime lower than the penalty would be for delivery of the real thing. As an example, if a person delivered real cocaine to an adult, he would face a maximum penalty of 10 years, a Class B felony. If a person delivered any amount, large amount, small amount, of a substance which he said was cocaine and turned out to be milk sugar, the maximum penalty would be C felony or 5 years in jail. The only other alternative is to charge the person with theft by deception. Only if we can prove that the person knows that the stuff is phony and if he misrepresented what it was and he obtained money as a result. The penalty here depends on the value of the money that he received. Let's take an example. If a person, let's say a 50-year-old man, sells fake amphetamines to kids, he knows the stuff is phony and he misrepresents them. And the kids take, let's say there are five kids and they each buy $5 worth of these phony drugs. The man can be charged only with a Class B misdemeanor because the value that he receives is less than $50. He would have to receive $500 or more in money or other type of property for the drugs that he sells or the substance that he sells in order to be charged with any felony level offense. These types of offenses, or at least the Department of Law being able to charge someone for an attempted delivery or theft by deception when a phony drug is involved, is fairly rare. It's difficult for us to gather enough evidence to support either of those charges. This bill, however, I feel takes care of some of those problems that fill the gap that the present law cannot handle. This bill was basically modeled after the Drug Enforcement Administration Model Imitation Control Substances Act, but it seems to be drafted somewhat better than the DEA Model Act, and I think it would withstand certain constitutional challenges that the DEA Model Act might not. I think it also protects pharmacists or owners of drugstores who might be selling over-the-counter diet capsules, because these kinds of diet pills that are sold legitimately are not included in the definition of imitation controlled substances, which requires that representation be made or the dosage unit appear that the thing is a real controlled substance. We hope that this legislation, if it were passed, would cut down on the number of people, particularly young people, for ordering these phony drugs from magazines that are published nationally as well as regionally. I would like to go through the bill kind of page by page, although we may not hit every page, and offer some suggestions or comments. And I would state right now that the Department of Law is willing to work with the committee staff on this bill to make, to do any additional research or make necessary recommendations to the committee. On the first page of the bill, the first offense, 1714010, manufacture or distribution of imitation controlled substance. My only recommendation here would be that I would suggest the substitution of the word deliver or delivery wherever the word distribute or distribution appears. The only reason for that is to be consistent with the new Controlled Substances Act, which is in Title 11, Chapter 71. And the definition of deliver or delivery in that act is found in Section 900, Subsection 6, and it's very similar to the definition of distribute that is in the imitation control substance bill. But just for the sake of consistency and to cut down on the number of words that we have to use, I would recommend that change. As a policy question, the offense of distribution of an imitation controlled substance to a minor certainly is a question for the committee and the legislature itself to decide where to draw the age limitation. This particular bill says that a person who is 18 or older to distribute an imitation controlled substance to a person under 18 is guilty of a higher class of crime than if both people are 18 or older or both are under 18. The only thing I would point out here is that the Controlled Substances Act itself has different ages and different requirements. It provides that any person who distributes a controlled substance, a real thing, to a person who is under 19, so long as that person under 19, who I'll call a minor, is at least 3 years younger than the person who is given the drug or sells the drug to him. And that's to avoid the situation where people in the same age category are simply sharing drugs to each other. You don't get the higher chances because they're in the same age category. The advertising statute, 1714.03 on page 2, probably poses more potential problems that need to be researched. And a couple of problems that came to my mind, and that I'm certainly willing to help the committee staff to work on, is the constitutionality of the statute itself, being it penalizes at a Class C felony level speech in the form of advertising. And I think that some research needs to be done on that aspect of it. The second thing that we should be concerned about is whether the state of Alaska can gain jurisdiction over a person, say, in Virginia, who places an ad in a national magazine knowing that the magazine is going to be circulated in all 50 states, including Alaska. So we need to do some research to determine if, in fact, Alaska can get jurisdiction over that person. Under Section 040, the Imitation Controlled Substance Drug Placebo, I think that the provision is broad enough to protect a doctor who is distributing a placebo for use in his practice. I would recommend adding a definition of practitioner along the lines of the definition that's found in the Controlled Substances Act in Title 11, Chapter 71, Section 900, Subsection 19. It's got a very thorough definition of practitioner there. The forfeiture section seems to be very similar to that found in the new Controlled Substances Act, and I won't go into any detail on it. The definition appearing on pages 8 and 9, I would offer a couple of comments here. The definition definition of controlled substance, there appears to be a typographical error or omission. Controlled substance is defined in 1181-900, subsection C6, and the bill itself only says 906. I don't know if the provider of statutes is supposed to touch those kinds of things or not. The definition of imitation controlled substance does include a listing of those seven substances which the Drug Enforcement Administration circulated as being very commonly used, primarily in amphetamines or uppers. The problem that is coming about now is fake downers or fake cravings, which are a depressant. And perhaps somebody could look into the possibility of locating the substances that are in those fake depressants as well, and possibly adding those to the list. I do have a concern on the last page, page 9, lines 11 through 13, subsection E, which talks about the prior conviction, if any, of a person who is in control of the substance, if he has prior convictions related to drugs, controlled substances, or fraud. The evidence rules in the state of Alaska probably should be looked at, and there are two in particular, evidence rule 609, which pertains to impeachment of someone if he testifies with prior convictions of a crime. And the evidence rule limits the use of prior convictions to those convictions which are crimes of dishonesty or false statements if they occurred within the previous 5 years. So this appears to be somewhat broader than that evidence rule. There's another evidence rule, 404, probably subsection B, that should be looked at, that permits, under certain circumstances, evidence to be introduced of a person's prior bad act, not necessarily resulting in conviction. At any rate, I would suggest that either that subsection be made consistent with the evidence rule, or a provision be made specifically which allows the prosecution to introduce evidence of any prior convictions related to controlled substances or fraud in its case in chief, that is, its case that it puts on to prove its case, which may be the only evidence that we put on. Perhaps the prior convictions, if they are that relevant to the person's intent, to proving the case of delivering a phony controlled substance, should be allowed in as part of the initial proof. I have no other comments on behalf of the Department of Law, but as I indicated earlier, we are certainly willing to work with the committee staff to make whatever changes are desired by the committee. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Butterfield, with your son, now and then, I see if there are questions from the committee members or anybody talking about questions.
Yes, can you hear me, Anna?
Yes, I can.
We have a system right here prepared by Mr. Hickey. Have you seen that this past?
No, I have not.
The system note that indicates a zero fiscal impact that has an analysis that frankly seems to be inconsistent with us because it's, and I'm not going to read the whole thing, but it does show that new prosecutions will represent additional workload, have the effect of hampering the department's overall ability to prosecute criminal offenses, affected by diverting resources and other matters currently being addressed. Have you discussed with Mr. Hickey that? A system out and it's frankly somewhat negative analysis between the analysis section of it, but were you involved at all in drafting that system out?
No, I was not. The only discussion that I've had about fiscal notes was with a representative from the Division of Corrections about their fiscal note and the need for about 30 new beds, I believe it was. And if I may comment on the Department of Law's fiscal note, I am at a disadvantage not having seen it. I think that Mr. Hickey's analysis would be correct. We would have more work to do, but it would not justify additional staff people.
It would be a fact, and we talked about this in those previous things, it would be a fact, would presumably be a shifting of emphasis from one set type of plan to another, should this bill be passed. And the effect of diverting resources in other areas currently being addressed, that would necessarily result in a fiscal impact, but definitely a change, shift in direction of the Department of Law. Isn't that correct? That is, every one of these cases you have to talk to, you can't talk to some other case. Isn't that right?
I agree with you, or else we work harder and longer. Or both.
Well, I know you work hard and long hours now, so it's hard to believe that you work any harder than you do now. Are you going to be around for the rest of your term?
I can be.
Okay, I have some other questions I was going to address to Mr. McCoy. They might be directed at you, but I don't know how to hold up other testimony here, so I'd like to hold those. I wonder if you're going to be around for a few minutes and hear the rest of the question.
Yes, I will.
Thank you, Rob. We'd like to have a comment about the representative debate.
That was good. I agree with Representative Watson on that particular system. However, I'd like to point out that we're talking about an expected number of convictions. Expected. Convictions of 33. Of which 50% of those that will be a Class B felony will be 1.5, if you can split one of them in half, that's 4%. The C felonies will be 20% or 6, with a total of 7.5 criminals, if you will, that will then catch you or convict. And yet the work of room for only 33. I find it very difficult to believe that then after a successful court court system, the Constitution of 33 on this particular crime. We're also talking about a conviction of 7.7 or dead. And I see a picture most down here from, well, I won't get into that because we're not discussing that particular thing. But as far as the Department of Law is concerned, I noted that there was a disparity between the real personal vote and the analysis of it, which means the degree that they're willing to buy the analysis or the time it would take for the 33, when we're only dealing with such days in the future. And so we use the same connection on other cases, I guess we could go around the horn on that. If you've got drug drivers, if that's going to hold down the waitress or whatever you do in those cases. If you don't call out, I guess I could just say I rest my case on those people. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Johnson.
Just very briefly, Representative Green is obviously reading from something I don't have. Is there backup to these 15 minutes? I haven't been given any. I read that, but that isn't really reading when it was answering the question. I guess let me state the question more generally. Are there any attachments to either of these two system notes that I haven't been provided?
That's what I do. We have to be the same with the rest of it. If you look at that one, it's going to be the easier to do it.
Mr. Chairman, may I clarify that, please?
Yes, sir.
That particular fiscal note does not have that information on it. However, I have another fiscal note from another department, Division of Adult Corrections, which takes into consideration how they arrive at the cost estimate that they have. And I have that, and I'm sorry if you don't have it, but we have a little problem with some of our reporting structures at this point in time, which I'm sure you'll see about.
Right. I have the front page of the Division of Adult Corrections system and you're reading off an attachment. I'd like to get that about
it. Yeah, you've got the same front page, however, there is some in the back of it over here. Which you're down there in most of the ones that
get that before we go to the
while you're doing that, while you're trying to take that out, can you have Lieutenant Lieberman testify at the time that he's on the contract with Jeff?
My name is John Lieberman. I'm a retired United States Farm Company manager, and I'm in the South Pole. And I'd like to start by saying that I'm basically overjoyed to see a bill that the House Bill 10 is being introduced. Something the President for many years overdue. I have one comment on the bill itself in front of us. The 1714-015 the list of the 7 proposed substances being included, like the sodium, sodium sulfate, pseudo sodium, and so forth. They're all basically similar. You have the same problem with substances that are being sold as depressants and synthetic cocaine or synthetic cannabis. And I would like to see if possible something added to that, such as in Senate Bill 190, the new drug program, which has Article 2, standards and schedules, and that is controlled substances advisory committee form that would be given authority to add or delete substances to the 1714-015. I feel it's imperative that we keep this avenue open to us, as I'm sure that if these 7 substances are banned under House Bill 10, that the manufacturers will soon come up with substances that are not included in here and will end up with a problem with that as we have it now. In the first case, the controlled substances are normally purchased to manufactured by mail order, the price ranging between $30 and $100 per thousand pills. These pills are sold, and I'll speak based on my experience in Anchorage. On the street in Anchorage, for between $1 and $5 each. Profit margin based on that is excellent. And it's basically become a multi-million dollar business. Alone. 7 to 10 years ago, an excess of 90% of the pills being sold on the street were controlled substances and ketamine and barbiturates. And they were created a problem because of that. By 1980 and 1983, an excess of 90% of these pills being sold on the street are imitation controlled substances. The problem has become phenomenal simply because there is absolutely nothing that can be done about it. I personally have seen on numerous occasions in various places in Anchorage quantities of these imitation controlled substances ranging from 100,000 dosage units to up to and possibly exceeding 500,000 or half a million dosage units. On a regular basis, we see quantities of 1 to 5,000 of the imitation controlled substance dosage units. They have become extremely common. Most of these substances are not addictive, but after continuous use, they can be psychologically addictive because most of the person is using them, feel that they are getting a legitimate substance, and they are abusing it as a legitimate substance. Physical problems that result from ingestion can include excessive ingestion or overdose, caffeine, heparin, and then combined with other substances such as alcohol, nicotine, and
increasing in availability on our streets. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Lieutenant Needham. Representative Abood has a comment at this time.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Lieutenant, I don't think, and I don't mean it the way it sounds, but no one ever said that we're going to get out of this crime picture without spending any money. It's going to take a lot more money than people think. But if we want to rid our streets of crime or do the best job we know how, we're going to have to spend some money for it. It will impact the courts, it will impact the jails, it will impact the judges, it will impact the citizens. Now, if we don't want that impact, I would suppose that we'll let it go the way it is. I'm sure there will be some type of an impact. Incidentally, I would like to say that I received this information, those figures I quoted you, excuse me, from the Division of Adult Corrections, which I felt those figures, those 33, were appropriate for the fiscal note on the Department of Law, as far as the judges and the court proceedings, etc. Because we're dealing with that many cases only in this particular area. And this figure here is dated the 13th, 1983, and it's I have a fiscal note on it, which I find it rather difficult to not comprehend, but believe, let me put it that way. And I'm still working with only 8 beds or 8 persons that will go in for an average length of sentence of 2.5 years on a Class B and a Class C 1.09 years with flat years, and I don't know what flat years means, of 1.9 in the case of B felony and 0.82 for a C felony. The person years is 2.85 versus M C felony 4.92, a total of 7.77 persons being actually incarcerated for this particular crime in this state. That is the estimate. They rounded off to 8, which means, interpreted to mean 8 beds. For the 8 beds that we're talking for that length of time, they're talking 1,168,000 dollars to house 8 of these guys or people for this particular crime. I find that very hard to digest between you and me.
Thank you.
I have no further statements at this time. Thank you.
Mr. Lang is present here, the signer of the fiscal note, and if we can delve into that, we can delve into it a little later. Are there questions that are created by the people who are on the teleconference at this time? You got a question that people are sitting out there that was worth doing it more than this.
No, Lieutenant Needham and I don't have any questions.
I have some questions that they may be able to answer. I'm going to try to object them to these two gentlemen, but if they could stick around.
Marion Kowalski is here and would like to testify.
Hmm?
K-O-W-A-C-K-I.
It's a male.
Yes, go ahead, please.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Marion Kowalski. I work with a program here in Anchorage called TAP, Street and Alternatives to Street Crime. My interest in presenting some comments regarding this bill has to do with our contact, especially with juveniles, and some of our experience in seeing what's happened in different parts of the country with respect to this type of a problem. It appears from a very brief review I've done of the bill that it appears to be modeled a great deal on some model legislation that was prepared by the Drug Enforcement Administration, which in previous years had also done some model legislation regarding the issue of paraphernalia. As you may be aware, probably from the press and other aspects, the issue of look-alike drugs has been what could be best described as an increasing problem for the last several years. In many ways, it's tied to the whole issue of drug paraphernalia and glamorization of drugs. My particular interest in this legislation has to do with that they think they're taking, not exactly what they're reported to be. That's one of the usual dangers in illicit substances. Things of particular interest to this legislation have to do with the lookalike. I know from our experience that at different times, different schools here in the Anchorage community experience problems with what can best be described as lookalike drugs. Licensed by the Drug Enforcement Administration as an analytical laboratory, on different occasions we've been approached by school personnel to check different kinds of chemicals or substances that have been taken. Our experience has been on a number of occasions, material that's been brought to us is not looking. I think the danger that is more underlying is the fact that different experience in other parts of the country has shown, even though these particular so-called look-alike drugs are not currently controlled, they're not viewed as dangerous, too much of use of these drugs can be a health problem and can kill. My understanding is that a few parts of the country, I believe Ohio and at least two other states, have passed similar legislation outlawing look-alike because of some deaths that have occurred. It is also my understanding that at some point the Food and Drug Administration has attempted to tackle this problem but has not been able to at this time. But because of, since I'm not an attorney, my understanding is that the Postal Service has gotten involved in taking some of the advertisers and manufacturers to court. In a recent article that was published, the Florida Drug Information Center, it publishes a bi-monthly newsletter called The Street Pharmacologist. They dealt rather extensively in one recent issue with the issue of look-alike drugs. Their experience has been as far as doing some quality control testing. While the manufacturer may state that the drug has certain properties of parts of different drugs, their experience has been in testing them that they do not meet what the manufacturer claims to be there. What we've seen in the literature, the other danger I think that occurs, which is important in terms of the future, is that if an individual, for example, young juvenile, is buying what he or she believes to be black beauties, and they turn out to be these lookalikes, they may take several and feel some effect. Unfortunately, if they run into the real thing, they may take several of those, and the effects would be extremely different because it is not the same thing. One of the things that I found extremely interesting is the forfeiture section in this legislation. One thing I might suggest for consideration is that some of the forfeitures that involve property or funds might be used for either education, prevention, or treatment. This type of an approach has been used in some other states. The state of Florida, I believe, used a trust fund to set up a great deal of their drug and alcohol rehabilitation programs from a suit that the state party to and successfully resolved with a major drug manufacturer. My suggestion might be to consider in some way any forfeiture as far as funds, goods that could be converted into funds might be applied towards education or prevention and rehabilitation activities. The other thing that is of some interest that is not specifically dealt with in this legislation is one of the new phenomena that's been appearing on different parts of the country at this time. And those are what are called the cocaine lookalikes. Again, the preliminary experience that has been reflected in the literature says that these two, while supposedly made of, quote, legal substances, have a danger potential. That apparently is the situation that's been experienced in Florida recently. One thing I would suggest is that if you have an opportunity to pick up a magazine called High Times and look through the advertising, you'll see substantial amounts of advertising, various kinds of drug paraphernalia, and also a large amount of the so-called lookalikes that are addressed with this legislation. And another point, just for interest, which does not necessarily deal with the legislation as proposed, is the issue of Quaaludes. A little bit of history. Quaaludes, about 1975, recall during President Carter's term of office, Dr. Peter Born was his health advisor, and Dr. Born ended up leaving the office because of the issue of platelets when he wrote that he described as a COVID prescription. At the present time, there are two states, Georgia and Florida, that have outlawed platelets being prescribed. There is at least one national pharmaceutical chain that will not honor a prescription by any physician. They would be Eckerd Pharmacy. There was an article in a recent edition of Health Magazine that talked about the step plan, which appeared to be the new wave of how platelet prescriptions are being written. And the state of New York, which runs a semi-automated prescription system, one stress clinic in the city of New York is responsible for nearly 50% of all the platelet prescriptions written in the entire state in 1 year. And the platelets are something that we may see as an upcoming problem in the future here. Historically, we tend to run some 6 to 9 months behind some of the other national trends, probably the exception of cocaine. And to some extent, Alaska is probably a bellwether indicator of kind of the problems that we're going to be having. I think that would close the comments that I have. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Pilati. Are there questions for Mr. Pilati from any of the committee? I don't seem to be any questions at this time, Mr. Pilati. I think Representative Crossman has some questions of the faculty. If you'd like to stand by, you will stand on the side of the faculty.
Thank you, Dr. Reason. I'm here in the general at this time.
Thank you, Mr. Pilati. We didn't have any questions from members of the committee at this time. However, Representative Coxon, Representative Ricky, and Representative Lister all have questions of the faculty. If you hope to care to stay there for a little bit, questions might develop. We have to see who is in the committee at this time. Representative Coxon.
I don't know who to direct some of these questions to, but your introduction was that Mr. McCoy, that you had some experience in this and familiar with the legislation, and I direct them to either of you. Section 030 on advertising, I'm just trying to establish what that section means. If you look at the ads that you passed out to us, and I'm sorry that the members in the teleconference don't have those, let's refer to the one on 68 Midwest Pharmaceutical, another one by Midwest Pharmaceutical on page 66, and then third one with clearance prices, I think these are the ones you referred to. In your opinion, would those advertisements be a Class C felony under Section 030? Based on what you know about what those are made.
Jim?
Yes, sir, Dave.
Thank you. I have in front of me an analysis by Mr. Lee of the Legislative Council, dated February 1, 1983, if I may quote. section 17.1303O, prohibits the business to promote the distribution of imitated controlled substances. I won't go into that. The section is directed mainly at those persons who promote the distribution of an imitation controlled substance by soliciting advertising space in newspapers, magazines, etc., or by publicly distributing advertisements for an imitation controlled substance. The publisher and a distributor of not only a local, but of a national publication would be prosecuted for violation of section 17.16.14.030 if the state can establish beyond a reasonable doubt that the person had the requisite mental state. The defendant must have known that the purpose of the advertisement or solicitation was to promote the distribution of an imitation controlled substance in the state of Alaska. It is obvious that it would be easier for the state to prosecute an individual who resides within the state, but Alaska has criminal jurisdiction over a non-resident publisher of a national magazine or newspaper who knowingly publishes an advertisement to promote the distribution of an imitated controlled substance, or that person consummates the crime from outside the state by the intervention of an innocent or guilty agent, such as a newsstand operator within the state. That's referred to as cell 05.1010. Crime connecting outside the state is consummated in time. And that's the extent of that particular certain time of the year.
I'm familiar with that, and I know that that's what the intention of it is. What I'm trying to establish is whether if the employee became indeed bad, the result in conviction under such no fear.
I think you should ask them to. I know that they can.
Do you want them to? What's your intent?
Still very popular, as I said, I think it would probably be to be the subject of research that was brought and decided at that time that it would have been the light that it was brought.
Mr. McCoy was introduced to have a years of experience, and so I'm trying to determine whether or not you want these citizens to be the 5-2 thing.
That's probably a fair question, Mr. McCoy.
I'm talking about a national magazine outside the state of Alaska.
Yes. Do you think that ought to be the case? Even though, and the way I read this and the comments, as many of you did, the person need not necessarily be convicted of the actual distribution. And if that's your intention, to have the person guilty of the past few times, even though they would never be convicted of the distribution of the innovation control companies itself.
Again, I think you should call it the disclosure of Mr. Pettis
The comment I have is that based on what his intention is, I would like to support the concerns of Mr. Pettis about the constitutional challenge of what the health of the community can come to mind.
So what do you do?
I'm saying I believe in both the law of state, he is guilty of the statute of summary, is that? I'm not sure that's the answer to the question. And the bill that is a class two felony, you know.
I think it's clear we're referring to the other
side. It's a very clear
question. You're very bold.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think that from reading not only the analysis, but the bill, and looking at the legislation and the people, the citizens here, but it's very obvious that the intent of the legislation was to prosecute and to find them guilty of distributing literature that would cause someone to purchase that controlled substance. And certainly I think that any agency that would perpetuate such a thing on the use of our country should be prosecuted. And I don't believe that it would be unconstitutional, since in fact we do have control over it in state commerce.
You're very thoughtful.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to get into the debate on what's in the merits of it. I'm just trying to establish that what the intention of this here is to convict somebody of a 5-2 for speech, for advertising, and not for the distribution of the indications and so forth, whether the thing is legal.
Sure, we'll discuss it another time. Can I ask one more and then maybe I mean, I have several questions, but I'll have to yield the floor shortly. Let me ask.
Thursday, Clarkson. Thursday.
Lieutenant McCoy, do you have any evidence that, based on your experience or whatever reports there are, that the use of an imitation controlled substance leads to the use of the real drug? And let me just say as a beginning, I trace it through in my mind, and it seems to me that despite the fact that caffeine is dangerous on its own, the fact is we can buy caffeine over the counter, that every kid that's using an imitation controlled substance is a kid that's not using a real controlled substance that we know is dangerous. And so the question is, then in my mind, the only question becomes, well, if they're going to use the imitation, are they going to change and turn into people that use the actual controlled substance? Is there any evidence of that?
Only psychological dependence. Caffeine is a psychological dependence, just like coffee. Once you drink coffee a lot or you smoke cigarettes, nicotine is a very common stimulant. And you become psychologically addicted to coffee and to cigarettes. Now, in drug abuse, normally, now I'm talking about in narcotic, such as heroin, there you have a physical dependence and a psychological dependence. Yes, they do crave a stronger high, I may say, because you build up a tolerance for it. And you can build up a tolerance on stimulants and depressants. So yes, the answer to your question is I can't point out any one particular person or group of people, but the answer to your question is they will seek a stronger, if I might say, a stronger drug, or the real drug. Once they find out that they have to take 4 or 5 caffeine tablets, uncontrolled substance tablets, to get any kind of a feeling, once they get take a real substance such as amphetamine, speed, naturally they are going to respond to drugs. I hope I answered your question.
Yeah, I guess you did. I mean, I'm not disputing the problems with caffeine. I drink a lot of coffee. I'm familiar with the lower level of that psychological addiction. I guess the question, the testimony has been that the major danger here is that somebody that takes 5 look-alike drugs in order to get a buzz suddenly accidentally gets a real one, and that becomes an overdose. I'm trying to figure out just exactly how often that happens.
I can't answer that question. I really can't. Of course, I cited, 95 kinds of look-alike drugs in 81, 2, and 14, and 1982. There are many, many incidents of look-alike drugs that are not even reported. This is just what the police are involved in. So that would be really hard for me to answer.
While we're talking about that, let me ask about the 95 and the 214 or whatever. That doesn't quite jive with what we got from the prosecutor about the possible impact here, or from the correction system about the possible number convicted. Can I ask you for a little more detail about those 95 and 214?
These are 95 cases that were actually made where the seller sold it, and in most cases they were undercover police officers or agents, where they actually sold caffeine or ephedrine as a stimulant, as speed. Once we found out through our laboratory that they are, in fact, caffeine or ephedrine, the cases were dismissed. So there is no case. Those are the cases I'm talking about.
And presumably, in at least, let's say, 214 cases, you would, when you say make a case, meaning you have evidence to take it to the prosecutor that after
up until the time we find out that we do not have a controlled substance, then it is nothing.
With this legislation, then, you would assume that you would have at least 214 prosecutions.
Well, yes, that's correct.
Or more, if the problem
is. That's correct.
Okay, so we're trying to match
this. This is Barbara in Anchorage, and we are not being able to hear Gino's testimony and comments.
Barbara, did you not hear any of it, or is it just too low of a level?
It's very low level and it's cutting in and out.
Okay, thank you. Gentlemen, if you could speak up louder, then that would just have a problem.
Let me just summarize if I can. I was trying to figure out the 214 cases, and I think what you said is if the bill passed, that would produce 214 or more prosecutions under this legislation. My question, of course, was related to a fiscal note that indicates much less activity than that. That's all for now. I have some other questions.
I'm representing Wimpy next, and then
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. McCoy, in terms of creating statistics, I understand that there are about 12 deaths nationwide that are attributed directly to the lookalike. I assume that since the testimony is that one of the major problems is the habit of using lookalikes and then mixing them up with the real thing and the dangers, particularly to youth in that instance. I would assume if there are deaths or other cases that involve that, they would not be reported necessarily as a result of the previous use of lookalikes, but would be included with statistics on controlled substances.
That's correct.
So there is no detailed information available to us on what the real impact is, but in fact the real impact of the lookalike could be significantly larger, although that is certainly a judgment shot, than what we can prove on paper today.
That's correct.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to address this question to Lieutenant McCoy. We heard testimony from Lieutenant Needham from APD in reference to Little Cane. Is this your approval of what the Lieutenant from APD said in regard to this particular imitation drug?
Yes, Little Cane is a not controlled substance, and that was the case I was referring to in Fairbanks, a case in Fairbanks that did occur, and on the handout that I gave you, on the second page, where
this
it says...
This is Anchorage, and we're hearing no transmission at this time.
Put your button on, please,
Can you hear me now?
I heard a voice.
Can you hear me now?
Okay, yes, you're coming through a little clearer at this time.
Okay, lidocaine is a non-controlled substance.
I'm sorry, we lost you immediately.
You have to press the lever down, and then
put the orange bar.
And then you can lift it up.
Now can you hear me?
I heard the last part of your statement.
Now can you hear me?
Okay,
lidocaine is a non-controlled substance and is sold as an imitation substance, sold as cocaine. On the handout that I gave you on the second page, this handout right here. That's it. Right there. You have the direct copy. On the second page, they are referring to little kings. These are all look-alike cocaine on this page. And I do agree with Lieutenant Neal.
Otherwise, you would recommend that this be added to House Bill 10, then?
That's correct.
With the testimony we've heard today. Thank you.
For those of you in Anchorage who don't have that, so what he showed you was a full page out of a magazine that's entitled Main Laboratory Presents, and then in bold print it's got the hottest product line in the nation. And under that it lists in fairly bold print five separate things.
Excuse me, but this is Anchorage again, and if someone is testifying or making a comment at this time, we are not able to hear them.
what I was trying to describe for the people at Anchorage, if you're hearing, can you hear now?
Can you copy me now, Anchorage? If I may respond a little to Representative Clarkson's question regarding the 200 and some cases in 82, it would have just appeared to me that if this law were passed and they knew it was illegal, then would that not, by the very nature of that, cut that down to such an extent that it would become almost like your hard drug, causing it to be a felony? So therefore, we might not have that. Right now, it's legal. There's nothing illegal about it. You can advertise, you can buy it, you can do anything you want. The only real problem we have with it at the moment is that the private industry is making more money on an illegal basis, which can't be proven, because you're dealing with a class of people that don't care whether it's legal or illegal. But it is a very high profitable business for those that are in it. But no one is saying to these kids or anybody else, it's illegal to not get the real thing. What we're saying, it would be illegal to give a substitute or sell a substitute for the health and the welfare of those people who have been accustomed to taking five of these lookalikes, and all of a sudden the guy comes around and flips them for the same price, the real McCoy, to give the expression, and he gets zooped, or he gets nuked, if you will. And that's the thing we're trying to prevent. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Booth.
Question to Representative Booth. The prosecutor Butterfield suggested the need to include depressants if it was an attempt to address all the substances of concern. Did you specifically target one and not the other, or would it be your intention to try and include the depressants as well?
Chairman, may I respond? Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I know we're not catching Anchorage yet, are we? I'd like Anchorage to hereby respond to that.
Go ahead.
How do you copy an Anchorage now?
Right now, very well.
You still got me? The question was, why did I not include some of the other ones that Assistant Attorney General Rhonda Butterfield suggested that we include? My answer to that is I thought we had. I had worked very closely with Rhonda, and I'll be very honest about it. I'm surprised that we've come up with this type of information at this late date, and that we have been working very closely with. I intend to ask those questions from the Assistant Attorney General, if that would be answering your question. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
May I answer now?
Yes, please respond.
Thank you. I agree with Representative Abood. All we knew about until recently, I'm sure as far as he's concerned, is these seven substances. Yesterday, I talked to one of the Drug Enforcement Administration agents just to get an idea of the kinds of problems that they have here in Alaska with the phony drugs. And he mentioned to me for the first time
Tony Quaaludes and mentioned a couple of substances that sometimes comprise phony quaaludes in a case that they had a couple of years ago here in Alaska, and he mentioned those substances. I can spell them, I probably can't pronounce them. Coxylamine and Salicylamide. And I think that, this is new to me, and perhaps we could work further together and try to find out what some of the substances are that are in the phony depressant as well as in the phony stimulant. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't know what the intention of the chair is at this point in time, but because of the testimony of the Assistant Attorney General, it would appear that this needs some a major surgery, which I am extremely, disappointed in at this point in time. I do have an amendment I'd like to offer. I don't know what the chair's intention are. I would like to ask that before we go any further, and I may have a suggestion. And if I may offer one amendment, that if you would approve of this, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
The thing is, I don't think the surgery is major, but I think most of the things I think make better care to suggest that the study out of the control and other items here. Counseling could work out these things, and I think we could probably return an amendment to some of these things fairly simply, and I'd like to close the debate on those right now and do that. As soon as possible, still possible, Foxton has a place to go, I have a place to go, and before the time I'd like to have really drink it on it.
Well, I have one additional question in terms of the Butterfield testimony. I guess I'm a little concerned the Department of Law would inform us there's a concern for freedom of speech, a pretty major constitutional provision. I would prefer to have a written statement whether it is or it's not, in their opinion. I would assume, particularly given that last fall there's the statements out of the Department of Law of how they're beefing up their constitutional expertise, I think it's inappropriate to raise that question without a friendly opinion from the department or our own counsel for that matter.
We've got the benefit of our counsel here, again, exceeding the level of the hour, and I would be able to get into it. Ms. Butterfield does not have the statistical analysis with the opinion from legislative affairs counsel in her hand. She's got privilege to have here. So I guess we're on solid ground there. And I think counsel for the committee can, by either landline or some other means, work that out with Ms. Butterfield, and I'd like to delay further discussion of that matter. But I'm ready to do.
Yes, question. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Is the chair's intent to have a committee substitute for this particular bill or an amendment? What is the chair's intent, please?
It'll be the chair's intent at this moment to discuss these, get this list of stuff from Rhonda Butterfield and further input from the Department of Law as rapidly as possible. And then we will discuss that with you and ask you if you want to make a partial substitute and handle it that matter. And if at that time you don't want to, we will make a clear substitute and amend the bill in that fashion.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If I may, I'd like to thank those people who responded to my request to be here on our behalf. And again, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, a little bit of caution.
I do have to go. I have something promptly at 3:00. I have a number of other questions. What's the intent? I don't know if Lieutenant McCoy is here in town or other people that can answer some further questions. Are you planning on having another meeting on it?
Yes, we'll develop the additional list of lookalikes that will need to be included in it that have been brought to light today. We'll address in some other fashion with Ms. Butterfield, the question she has on 1714-030. I think we've got those for that. The questions that she brought up with regard to the court rules, 609 and 404B, we think we've got 404B controlled, and they will be produced by the board for 609. And like I said earlier, we'll get this redrafted and either allow the sponsors to build a sponsor substitute or have it not sanctioned. But what is it doing?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The witnesses that are here at the moment representing Clarkson are from Juneau and they're ready to go.
What I'm trying to say is that the questions I have not had a chance to raise yet on new matters because of the shortness of the hour. Will I have an opportunity to raise those and try to get an answer?
We'll allow those questions when we come back and do this again. We've got something scheduled both tomorrow and Thursday, which is going to take our time. And the committee's going to work just as soon as it'll be Monday before we can hear this thing again. Whether the main schedule will permit, we'll check that and we'll reschedule this for Monday. I think it's an important piece of legislation and we're awfully close, I think, to getting it out. So, unless you have a schedule problem, we'll reschedule again for next Monday.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I do have a state affairs committee which I chair from 1 to 3. If it could be delayed later than that, or perhaps I can have, I'll make the necessary answer. Thank you.
So when we will make the necessary arrangements and we'll reschedule for Monday, and I don't see a reason for a teleconference at that time unless Ms. Butterfield would like to be tagged on.
At this time, I do not foresee that necessity. Thank you.
If not, thank you all, particularly you that came out to the teleconference on the other end. I know it's an inconvenience and the community does really appreciate you taking the time to give us your input. And we'll go ahead and sign the teleconference off right now. Randy, Judge Deere will be contacting you right away to hold a landline conversation with regard to your suggestion.
That's fine, thanks.
That'll end the teleconference. You can go ahead and knock that off. Can you do some work for this committee with regard to this simple note that obviously Mr. Ryan is here, and we've got some context and you can see that there are committee members who are very attempt to spend the video of our time trying to resolve the simple note problem that probably before next Monday we can get cleaned up. You can, I'm glad Mr. Ryan is here because you can see the additional groups of drugs that we're probably going to have to do. And it'll be the community's attempt to set the path to come out next Monday very rapidly. And if we can get this to come in with the sponsor substitute by that time, I'd really like to, and committee staff will work as closely with you and members of your staff as we can. The things that are brought up have been real good. I was glad to have them. And, unless there's something that I don't see and you don't see right now, I think we're awfully close to having a bill. I don't think it's going to require major surgery. And if you work with us, I think we can do that by Monday.
Very pleased, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Do you have anything for us? Being that you're a co-sponsor to the bill, what do you think?
No,